podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello and happy new year. So, well, let's take a deep breath. Six game weeks with a variety of highs, lows and gut punches over the December festive period have today come to an end, with yet another gut punch as Liverpool lost 1-0 to Southampton. And FPLers and FPL content creators indeed everywhere are now looking forward to a week off without any Premier League football. Today, though, we're continuing with our relentless drive towards the future to pick over the events just around the corner. Unfortunately, there's no Anthony today due to sudden work commitments, but instead to help us out and to kick off 2021's podcasting in a strong fashion, we thought we'd do something a little bit different and give a relative unknown a chance. Accordingly, we've got a niche pundit. His name's Mark Southerns. He joins us today. Welcome, Mark. How are you doing?
Hello there. Yeah, thanks for the oxygen. Thanks for the exposure. It's much needed. But yes. Thanks for having me on in this rather historic game week for me, because I think I've probably just had one of my worst ever in FBL history. But I can't confirm whether I have or not, but it feels like it's one of my worst ever. Extraordinary game week. But I'm okay. I'm still in good spirits regardless, so it's all good.
Hi, Mark. Fantastic to have you on the pod this week. It's been a real pleasure having followed your content for a number of years now. We are, of course, Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL or at WGTA_Nick, or for the absent stag at FPL Stag. And of course, if you don't follow Mark for some bizarre reason, you can follow him as well at FFSScout_Mark. And if you want to join our mini league, the code is CPSULF.
Yep. So on today's pod, we will be doing, the focus on the blank game week, praying, of course, it doesn't get called off, but doesn't look like it's going to be. On that step, we'll be looking at our strategies and perhaps zeroing in on individual players as well. There is correspondence this week, despite Anthony squealing, being absent, and that will be on contextualising information. And then we've got our Q&A, of course. But first up, it's the game week reviews. And as Mark has just mentioned, it has been quite a tough one for you, hasn't it, Mark? If you wouldn't mind just letting us in a little bit on what happened.
Yeah, I haven't even looked at my current score. I have fluked, as Granville would say it, to Souček off the bench for his 11 points. And thank goodness I have. That was because Wood didn't turn up because of Burnley's postponement. Johnston comes in for Pope as well. So I get 13 additional points to add to the mammoth total of 27 that I've already got. So I end the game on 40, which is pretty dreadful in a game week where some people are getting towards three figures. That's the hardest thing. It's a bad one for me, but everybody else has turned really big scores. So one of those things, I do look at it and think I made an error. I think that I was looking at Mane out to Son to cover Son for the Leeds game. That went to the wire with my transfer. I should have done that. And instead of that, I made a kind of a cover move for my double game week. I took out Reece James and brought in James Justin just to get more, reinforce my double game week and my bench boost a bit. And that was a bad move. I should have gone Mane to Son. Yeah. Mane to Son was obvious. I didn't want to do it because of the ownership. It maybe felt like a defensive move rather than an aggressive one, but it would have made sense. It would have saved me to some extent from a big rank drop, but it wouldn't save me that much. I mean, that would have got me 20 or extra points, which would have helped, but it still would have been a pretty poor game week, even with Son's points, I think.
You do get them every now and again, don't you? And I can see exactly why you'd have maybe bolt at the kind of defensive move, because it just doesn't feel as exciting, does it? Or at least doesn't it feels like you're kind of doing something kind of quite short term, whereas you can see the long term sort of goals. And I'm sure that kind of does catch every FPL manager now and again. Amazing to see even the goat can get caught up in those sorts of things.
I think sometimes though, when you know you've made a mistake, which I feel like I have, it kind of helps in a way, because you kind of got some logic behind it. You think, okay, well, that was my fault. I was in control of that and I made the wrong call. And I think I had some bad luck on top of that as well. And that's often the way. A bad game week in FBL can often be a bad decision and then some bad luck layered on top of that. And when you get those two combined, you get a score like I've got here and a rank drop like I've got here. So it's fine. You know, I'll take it. It's a good time to do it because we've got the free hit next and then we've got the double game week. So it's going to be something which is easily forgotten with those two game weeks to come, because they're going to be pretty, you know, transforming game weeks, I think, in our season, those two.
Exactly. Exciting times ahead. Talking bad decisions, I also did one this week. I removed Kevin De Bruyne. I sold him for Rafinha. I did that just before the announcement for the Man City double game week, just because I was on 0.0 to do a different move, which was all planned, similar to you bringing in James Justin and also bringing in Vardy and having sort of a double game week as galore for 2 weeks' time. As it did work out, Kevin De Bruyne the next day that I sold him was confirmed as having a double game week, which was a bit annoying, having sold for 14 points, I think it was, having shipped that out. But overall this week, I did all right, 69 minus 4. Son captain obviously did the business, Fernandez, Vardy got an assist, but the big one, and it is just it sometimes I guess underlines the fine margins you get in FPL between a bad game week and a good one. This week my star was Rob Holding, who I brought in for Charlie Taylor, who was injured, and he got 10 points from an absolute BS assist. Basically, he passed it to Kieran Tierney on the halfway line, who then proceeded to tear up the pitch and score a magnificent solo goal. And to be honest, those 10 points probably have earned me the green arrow. So I'm up to about 790K or something like that, after the thousands of people seemingly have got Suchek off the bench. I think similar to Mark, I'm in a position now where I've made a mistake in selling KDB or shipping out Man City cover in any way, shape or form, and I'm looking to kind of rectify that going forward. And obviously a bit disappointing tonight with Robertson and Salah. I needed 17 points from them to go through in the cup. I got 3. So the casual team that I'm playing against, who haven't made a transfer for a very, very long time, have beaten me by 14 points, which is a bit depressing. Anyway, Nick, as usual, you've come out on top. How have you done?
Yeah, it was a really good game week, actually, after a couple of shady ones. So last week I did pretty poorly because I didn't have any of the Leeds attack, and I had Kane and Son, and of course the fixture against Fulham was cancelled, so I had a big rank drop after that week. But this week got 75 points in total, thanks mainly to Son captaincy and Harry Kane, also having Bruno Fernandes, Suchek. The main guys got me the points, and also my transfer in was Tyrick Mitchell for Jamal Lewis, so brought him in, 3.9 million to try and save some money, and he got me a cheeky clean sheet there. It was on 71 points ultimately by about 4 o'clock on Saturday, so already halfway there. I didn't have anyone play on Sunday, which kind of worked out all right with the clean sheets being wiped for a few people, and then Monday night I was meant to have Adams and Robertson and Salah. Obviously that didn't really work out. Got Zouma off the bench for the one pointer. Walker Peters stayed as the third sub, so I didn't get his points unfortunately, but pretty happy with that. Back up to about 55k overall rank, so yeah, it's going pretty well.
Yeah, it's going well. I did check to see if you managed to shout KWP's points somehow. I knew you had him, and I was convinced that you might have put him at first bench, and you may have somehow got his points off, like you seem to every week. But no, for once you didn't manage to pull points out of your posterior, but you still managed to beat me, which is, of course, just how things tend to go.
What about Mitchell, though, coming back as he has been at this time? And I mean, when you bought him, Nick, did you expect anything from him? I guess you did, because he played the previous game as well, didn't he? So you expect
that's the thing. He was named man of the match, I think, by Crystal Palace fans in that last match. And there was a lot of like talk online about how he was going to be back in the team. And I was looking at someone I could just bring in to give me a little bit of extra cash in the bank so I could do Zouma to Diaz the next week. And Mitchell seemed to fit the bill above the likes of Stroy. I was looking at Eric Peters as well for the Fulham game, but then I didn't fancy that one was going to go ahead, so I decided to go with Mitchell in the end, just for this week and the fixture, because Sheffield United have been so dreadful, and it kind of worked out.
That was the most classic Nick transfer I think I've ever seen, transferring between two cheapies and getting 6 points out of it. Midas touch that man. Staying with you, Nick, it's the Market Forces. Kind of a concise update today, so we've got a lot to talk about. Who are the moves and shakers off the back of that game week?
A lot of action with the Arsenal players after a very good performance against West Brom. Likes of Saka being heavily bought with 130,000 transfers in this week. And Tierney as well, 120,000 transfers in at time of recording. After getting that holy trinity of a goal, an assist and a clean sheet for 18 points in total. So both those guys attracting a lot of attention, obviously, with that game coming up next week with a lot of other teams blanking. Also, it seems like Suchek and Cresswell also attracting a lot of transfers in. 120,000 for Suchek and 110,000 for Cresswell. I mean, it kind of makes sense because both players have been excellent so far this season. Cresswell's now notched up 6 assists to his name. He's on all the corners, and you've got like some Bonner and Suchek getting on the end of those. But and Suchek, of course, only 5 million at the start of the season, looks like a massive bargain. Now has 5 goals and an assist to his name. But it seems a bit odd that they're being brought in this week. Can't really get my head around that, obviously, with the blank. They've got an excellent double game week the following week, but not really sure on the logic on why people are bringing him in so early. Perhaps not looking at the fixtures, we don't know. But otherwise, Sales, it's all quite predictable, I think. Teams and players that are heavily owned, but lots of blanks. So we've got the likes of Calvert-Lewin being sold, 160,000 transfers out for him. Salah, 130,000 transfers out. Rhys James is injured. He's being heavily sold. And Zouma and Bamford as well. But yeah, Calvert-Lewin, actually, he does have a game. But I guess a lot of people thinking he's been in such poor form that there are better replacements for him. He's not scored since game week 11 now. So that's 5 weeks in a row without a goal.
I guess we're early on in the process, aren't we? But I'm surprised to not hear Kevin De Bruyne's name there. I guess it was a golden assist. And I guess it was his first open playing goal in a while. But given these market forces and how they work, I'm surprised that people haven't thought, oh, Kevin De Bruyne, he's worth buying, especially, I guess maybe it'll be a reaction to tonight with Salah blanking, people will make that swap. And what do you think, Mark? Do you think that's likely to kind of come into force over the next couple of days?
I think it's incredible, isn't it? Because a couple of weeks ago, we were all writing off De Bruyne as, well, he's the heavy hitter, we've got to lose. And similarly, everyone was going, well, if I'm not bench boosting in game week 19, I'm definitely triple captaining Salah. And now, you know, 2 games later, it's turned on its head completely. And everyone's going to be getting De Bruyne in, probably going to be captaining him and triple captaining De Bruyne. And Salah looks almost dispensable the way Liverpool played again tonight. So it's so bizarre. It's got to remind ourselves, it's only 2 weeks ago that Liverpool put 7 past Palace and looked like an absolute machine, didn't they?
That was the week I didn't own Mo Salah, so I was trying to get away with not owning him for that fixture. And I thought I'd got away with it because he didn't start, of course. And then in 25 minutes, just absolutely destroyed me. So, he's always a danger to sell, isn't he?
He is. And I watched that game thinking, right, OK, on the wild card, I'm going heavy on Liverpool because they're obviously, I mean, that was ruthless, absolutely clinical. And, you know, ever since, they've really struggled to break teams down and get opportunities. And now, you know, my Salah and Mane double up looks pretty abject going into the double game week even. So, it's amazing how the fortunes of De Bruyne and Salah have just reversed in the space of, 14 days. Crazy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, things are, I guess, changing so much. And now, to do my customary segue into the main topic, we are going to talk about what's next, which is this sort of blank game week coming up. So the situation is, of course, that we have 6 games of game week 18, which are next Tuesday. And for a little while, there was a little worry about the fact that, you know, Elite Sport may see a bit of a pause or something like that. You have the likes of Sam Allardyce, probably disingenuously, with his mask squarely around his chin, asking for Elite Sport to have a couple of weeks off. Obviously, there are coronavirus numbers are rising. We acknowledge that, and thoughts are with those affected. We're not going to go into that here, but it looks like, according to the government's announced tonight, that Elite Sport is going to continue. So we're going to kind of do this pod on the proviso that everything will go ahead as planned. That week we'll go ahead with the 6 fixtures, but usual caveats surrounding caution apply. So perhaps don't use your free hit if you are planning to use it until you're absolutely sure that those games are going to go ahead, i.e. maybe next Monday or even next Tuesday. Do your drafts in the app or on paper or something like that, but maybe don't press confirm unless you're in love with a 0.0 and you've got to do it. But I guess a good starting point here is, what are we doing? I've got to just emphasise, of course, that this is a very team-specific thing, I think, more than ever, just because in past years, we've had a little bit more kind of a heads up when things are going to happen. We obviously knew the blank and double was coming a while ago, but I guess we didn't really quite have the idea of what teams were blanking and doubling from a long way out. And it really came down to how the chips fell for your team when that announcement came. So hopefully you will find some nuggets useful in what we're talking about tonight in terms of helping you with your strategy during the upcoming weeks. We had a few questions on this as well. So FPL Swan and Rahul both asked kind of, what's your minimum number of players you'd feel comfortable rolling with if you're not using the free hit? And the FPL Morpheus Fire Rishi says he's got 6 men, Martinez, Son, Diaz, KDB, Stones and Bruno, so nice sounding 6 for game week 18. Is that enough? Nick, I guess you're the guy, because Mark and I think are both committed to the free hit, wrestling with perhaps preserving your free hit. Where are you on this at the moment?
Yeah, so the scenario laid out by Morpheus Fire is kind of very similar to my own situation. With the fixture rescheduling, I've now got six men in my current team that have a fixture. That's Martinez, Son, Kane, Bruno, Calvert-Lewin and Mitchell. And if I take a hit, I can get quite easily Diaz and De Bruyne in and have them in place then for the double game week as well. Because obviously they have the fixture in the next week, and that would leave me with eight players. And I'm looking at that, and I'm actually thinking that could potentially be sufficient coverage because, you know, what I'm looking at as well is who do I have FOMO with for next week? Who do I feel like I'm going to be missing out on if I don't free hit? And the names that are being thrown around a lot, it's like Lacazette. I'm not particularly worried about him. Same with Callum Wilson, Saka, Tierney, Chiron Clark, Harry Maguire, Phil Foden, like. You know, none of these are like thinking these are the guys that I need to free hit to bring them in to fill those three extra slots, essentially. So ultimately, I'm kind of thinking I could potentially hold the free hit now because I'm looking at what's to come for the rest of the season. There's going to be a double game week in 26 and then a blank game week in 29. So I don't know, obviously, who's playing at this moment in time, but I'm thinking, you know, if I wildcard, I could get a great team for that double game week in 26, bench boost then. And then free hit in the blank, you know, so I could get potentially 15 men, for instance, for that game week in 26. And that seems like a reasonable strategy at this moment in time. I think there's going to be some short-term pain. I feel like I'm at least in a comfortable position enough in my overall rank that I could take a little bit of short-term pain, maybe a drop of 50K or something like that. And then ultimately, it's all about your end of season position, isn't it? Because that's what's sort of seared in your rank history. Whether you finished, if you were 5K or 10K, no one really cares. It's about where you finish at season close. So I'm thinking about going for the short-term pain and not free hitting, though I'm certainly not set in stone at the moment.
With the players you mentioned there, you know, you've got eight players and you've got a lot of the big hitters that I would identify as essential. Like, I mean, I'm looking ahead at my free hit team. You've named quite a lot of them there. And I think that, I mean, looking at the Morpheus Fire situation, he's named six players: Martinez, Son, Diaz, KDB, Stones, and Bruno. I just ran that through a few projections before the show, and that kind of totaled 35.6 points on rate my team. And then I ran my 11 through that I want to get, and I got 59. So the difference is about 24 points. It's not huge damage. And I think what you described there, Nick, you'd probably come out in mid 40s. So I probably only get like a 10 point. Advantage over you. And you're right, you know, I'm looking at names like Lacazette and Wilson, Neto, maybe Rashford you got a little bit of fear of, I don't know. At Burnley, that sounds like a kind of game you could get something in. But I, you know, there's no certainties here. What I will say is that, you know, looking forward to potentially free hitting in 29, you know, we don't know what the fixtures are going to be, but I think, you know, those fixtures are going to be based on progression in the FA Cup, and I've got a feeling that there'll be slim pickings in that game week for the free hit. And therefore, that it won't be difficult for those without the free hit to kind of put a team together, which is good enough. Whereas I think in this one, it's harder. But I think if I was in your situation, I'd do exactly the same as you. I'd go with the eight players you've got, because I don't think you're going to miss out by many points.
I agree with that, Mark. Where Nick is a very, very good position to be in terms of saving your free hit. I've also got eight players too. And people were saying to me, oh, you're fine, Tom. You know, just don't use a free hit. That's a waste of a chip. Three of those players are Kilman, Lewis and Brewster. And I also don't have any Man City players. So it's going to be a bit of a tough one if I don't use it. I think Nick's in a slightly stronger position than I am. I do completely agree with your point about game week 29, actually. I think that could be a bit of a hell zone by the looks of it, and you may be free hitting. Obviously, it's speculation at this point. We don't know who's going to progress in the FA Cup, but you may be free hitting and building a team of players from teams like Fulham and even Joe's beloved Brighton. Like, ouch, do you really want players from those teams? Like, we can just cover the main men, whereas this one, I think there is a bit more scope to have a bit more depth to your team and build a team of players who are, one, fairly exciting, you know, like the Rashford point, and we'll come on to a few of those players in a moment, and two, players who non-free hitters won't have an opportunity to get. Because outside of United and outside of City, are you going to be as interested in getting those guys in if there isn't double the very next week. It's a very nice kind of chance to have a one night stand with quite a few quite exciting, risky players, which I always quite like. I like having that sort of opportunity. But equally, I guess, you know, in 29, when we do come to it, it may be the case that, you know, the average is going to be so low. It may be if there are only kind of two or three kind of games going and the average is six, and you get 22 points just by players showing up and playing over 60 minutes, that you've got an automatic advantage of playing the free hit. So it's a very kind of difficult one to balance up. It's just the look of this kind of game week coming. There are kind of quite a few obvious teams with which to target your transfers in terms of your free hits and how you build that team. It makes me think this week is actually quite a good one. But obviously, I'm kind of speaking from the perspective of someone who's committed to using it. So, and it may not be the case for you listening. So it's not always kind of, you know, apples and apples as such. Let's move on then to targeting and kind of strategy in terms of how you build your kind of team here. And I guess we'll kind of cover both perspectives. So if you're free hitting, how do you build your team? Do you zag or do you bow to ownership? And, you know, non-free hitters, like it sounds like Nick is going to be, there's a few questions around this. So FPL Quinto, for example, asks for non-free hitters, who do we go to cover those key teams? A really nice way of looking at this as well is looking at Kane and Son, because obviously those are players who are very, very highly owned, and they're going to be owned by non-free hitters and perhaps free hitters alike. And it's a nice way of zeroing in on the dynamic of kind of zagging or bowing to ownership. FPL Physio, for example, asked, and a few players that we've mentioned already, should we play it safe with Son and Kane or look at alternatives like Rashford and Lacazette? I mean, Mark, the dynamic between zagging and bowing, which one are you?
You've got to get a bit of a balance. I mean, I've just kind of made a mistake in this game week by not going with ownership, not covering high-owned players. So I'm very cautious of not doing that again with the free hit. So I will get one of Son and Kane. I don't think I'm going to get them both. I mean, the thing is, you've got to look at the fixture. Villa away is not an easy game. And you've got to think that Mourinho will set up in a way where it's like, well, you can have the ball, Villa, but we're going to catch you on the break. So I don't think it's going to be a very open game with lots of goals. I think, you know, on paper, that looks like a very tight affair, decided perhaps by the odd goal. So I think going both Son and Kane might be overkill when you've got the opportunity, like you say, to get a few differentials like Rashford in or with the free hit. So I'm going to cover it to some extent by getting one of them. And it's probably going to be Kane, because I just think the options with a free hit, there's more plentiful options in midfield. You know, you can get Rashford and you can get Neto and players like that who've got a bit of promise. Whereas up front, you know, beyond Wilson, you're looking at someone like Watkins. And again, you know, Watkins against Spurs, I don't think Villa are going to get many chances out of that Spurs defence. They're going to be sitting back. So it's probably going to be Kane that I'm going to go for, and the hope that Son doesn't do too much damage in that game. But I wouldn't go both in a free hit situation.
It certainly makes sense. I think the phrase I came up with was balanced zag for how I'm going to be looking at it. I actually went the other way, which is concerning, actually, hearing it from you, in terms of going with Son, who I felt was just kind of looking at it as just hygiene at this point, and using a 4-5-1 maybe, because there is that, as you mentioned, the embarrassment of options in the midfield. So maybe lean into that. I haven't been drafting too much for the reasons that I've said, in terms of I want to activate quite late. But for me, a lot of the free hit will be set up to own players that non-free hitters won't be buying. Son and Kane, just incidentally, I had a look at their data in preparation for this pod, and it's just incredible this year, their overperformance in terms of XGI to the delta. Their combined overperformance is 21 goals. Like, the second in terms of a duo is Rashford and Bruno Fernandes, and that's 9. So just incredible difference between those sets of players. So I guess you're praying in that Villa game, which of course is not an easy game, as you've inferred, Mark, that combination doesn't happen again. But I'd not bet against that totally.
No, and I guess by getting one of them, you've covered half of it. I mean, it's funny because watching them against Leeds, I mean, that XG situation is borne out because they kind of lull you into a false sense of security. It's like watching Vardy. You watch Vardy for Leicester, you think he's not hardly had any touches. He's not looking threatening at all. He always pulls something out of the bag, you know, before the 90 minutes is up. And Kane and Son were a bit like that. I was watching the game thinking, OK, Alioski gave the penalty away, a bit dubious. But even after that, I was thinking, well, Kane and Son aren't doing much. Spurs don't look that threatening. They're not building anything. Leeds are the better team. And then out of nothing, a flash of brilliance. Great pass, brilliant finish. And there's the points. And that's what they do. So it's horrible to watch, because you actually sit there and think, I can come out now from behind the sofa. And then before you know it, they send you back there in a flash. So watching that Villa game is going to be torturous if I only have one. But I think I need to cover one and hope that he's the one who comes out stronger of the two.
Yeah, I think Vardy is the perfect comparator there, because he's one of those players that, you know, you look at the underlying stats and you're like, well, he never gets any shots anyway. And then of course, he gets a penalty, or it's just that one goal attempt where he gets behind the defence and that's it. And he always does that. And I think Son and Kane have been a little bit like that this season, especially Son. I mean, I did look at a little bit of his sort of his numbers and his amount of goal attempts. He's only actually had 28, which is 19th out of all the midfielders. It's less than the likes of Lookman and Ruben Neves. But, you know, this is just how it's been for Spurs and Son. He's just an excellent finisher, isn't he? I mean, his goal conversion rate this season is 42.9%, which obviously you would argue is unsustainable, but you know, like, just looking at the stats, you know, both Son and Kane, they're the top scoring players in the game at the moment for midfielders and forwards, and Kane's got double figures for goals and assists, and it's just crazy. And I think even with the highly owned assets in terms of zagging, you know, we can see if you just own one of them, you're not going to escape the red arrow if they're both performing. That's the risk of just owning one. You're essentially just kind of sitting there. You're still dropping because of the sheer amount of managers that have both. And it's probably going to be even worse next week with people free hitting and owning both for that as well. So I think that's the risk there.
I got this feeling we're going to be sitting here in game week 37 going, it's unsustainable. There's no way they can keep this up. It's like,
exactly.
I feel the same. I look, when I was playing the wild card, yeah, one of the reasons why I didn't go Son and Kane is because I looked at it and thought, you know, and they've had matches like Wolves away where they look pretty dire. And, you know, Mourinho set them up in such a way where they weren't getting any chances at all, even with the combination that they've had. So, you know, you can look at data and try and get some reassurance to back a decision not to go with either of them. But at the end, they're going to make you pay. So I don't know. It's going to go to the wire, to be honest, this one. I may well end up with both of them after all, but it's just what you can configure. And yeah, going 4-5-1 is an interesting one. I haven't set a free hit team up with that option yet. There's some good cheap defenders, actually. You mentioned Kieran Clark. I think against a Sheffield United team who don't score goals and concede on set pieces, Kieran Clark's a good player to have. So there could be a setup for me where it's 4-5-1 where I could get them both. So it's early days. I've got time to look at that, but there's many options, isn't there?
Yeah, no, definitely plenty of time, which is always good. It's always nice, a bit of a breather rather than having to make huge decisions in the space of 2 days, which has probably been a bit of a collective undoing, apart from Nick, of course, who's managed to walk across water here. Sheffield United, absolutely awful. Just to riff on Clark slightly, they've only created four big chances over the last six games. They've got the second lowest XG, and frankly, don't look like scoring. But I think in terms of how you'd set up if you were free hitting, there are kind of those players all round, which are kind of nice little thing players. So I guess if you are free hitting, just think, who would Nick not buy? That's probably my way of doing it. That's the way I'm kind of setting up my team as a template. He's just rubbish Lacazette, for example. He's got the fourth highest XG in the last six. He's not really killing it, let's face it, in the analog stats. 9 shots in the box, 8 shots on target. But he's getting those high-quality chances, and he's taking them now. He's rediscovered his mojo, where Aubameyang's is. I don't know. Maybe he's drinking Aubameyang's mojo. But there's an almost unbelievable £3.2 million saving, which is just crazy. Like, if you told me at the start of the season Arsenal would be in a blank, Aubameyang would be a shoo-in. But at the moment, it's Lacazette who's converting. And just to stick with the Arsenal theme as well, very rare we get to talk about Arsenal in FPL context these days. There's also the Saka bloke. He's a joint second for shots in the box in the last six, behind El Ghazi? What, really? Yeah, he's second for shots in the box. He's not really boshing the stats right now, Mr. Saka. He's 17 shots overall, but only 5 of them have been on target. However, 5.3 million is just an incredible enabler. There's quite a few players like this, you know, like Holding, Nick's mentioned Tierney. I think he's got the most chances created amongst defenders over the last six. And Arsenal's game against Crystal Palace as well is probably going to be one of those that people are going to be, I guess, tripling down on, aren't they, Mark? Just because it's kind of the next nicest fixture, I guess, after the City kind of game against Brighton, which I'm sure we'll come on to just very, very shortly.
It is, and I think we haven't really got any whipping boys about. I mean, like West Brom, I guess, are the whipping boys again now, despite having, you know, the result at Anfield. We're suddenly going, okay, yes, you know, Big Sam's not working his magic. They're still whipping boys. But I think Palace have got tendencies to do that. They can capitulate. They can concede 3 or 4 goals. Obviously, we see the 7-0 home defeat to Liverpool. You know, it's quite possible against a confident Arsenal, if they get an early goal, there could be 3 or 4 goals in that for Arsenal, the way they're playing at the moment. I mean, they have found some creativity. You know, Smith Rowe and Saka look to have a good understanding, good combination. They're playing with no fear. And Lacazette, you know, I think he's had six big chances in the last three or four game weeks. He's getting chances. He's converting. He looks a different player as well. Like, just the way he's carrying himself on the pitch, the way he took that second goal against West Brom. You know, he's got confidence. You can see it in the way he took that goal. And I absolutely will have him in my free hit team, I think, because I think, as I say, Palace could capitulate. It could be three or four goals conceded, and then you'd back Lacazette to be in the points. So he's definitely one I'm getting.
Yeah, it makes you believe in a thing called form, Lacazette, I think. Nick, what do you say to that? I mean, I think there was a question, obviously, about what players you'd be covering as somebody who's not free hitting. You're in a decent situation, it's already been kind of covered, but what sort of players are you looking to bring in with your transfers? Is there anyone you're particularly worried about? Sounds like Lacazette is one that you're kind of hiding from.
Yeah, so I think obviously with my transfers, I've got to think about the following week in mind. So that's why I'm looking specifically at Manchester City and Manchester United assets, because they do have that double game week. So if that's the strategy that I've got to employ, if I don't use the free hit, obviously if I end up using the free hit, I might end up with triple Arsenal. I just have to see what happens over the next week or so. And obviously there's a strong case for all those Arsenal players you mentioned, but I'm just putting that to the back of my mind for now and hoping that Tyrick Mitchell picks up a clean sheet, and obviously his absence for the 7-0. So it's all on Mitchell for me, but we'll see. I think certainly in terms of other picks, the United defence, I think they're worth a shout out in terms of just who they're playing. So you mentioned, Mark, not many whipping boys this season, but I think it's more the opposite. There's just teams that just can't score at all, isn't there? Like Sheffield United and Burnley as well. So Burnley only have 8 goals this season. They've got the lowest goal attempts with 117 and only managed 36 shots on target all season. So that's 2 a game. So as long as De Gea doesn't spill the ball or something, or Tarko outleaps Shaw on a corner, you're probably guaranteed a clean sheet. So I think the likes of Maguire, Wan-Bissaka could be pretty decent picks as well for the free hit.
Well, I mean, it could happen. Looked into Wood recently because there's a lot of Wood for Wood on Twitter. And I saw my favourite stat on FFS is big chances missed. And big chances missed for Wood this year at this point is 12. And last year at this point, who led big chances missed? Chris Wood, 13. Absolutely brilliant. Perhaps some truth to that. I do like the idea of, I remember Wan-Bissaka was always kind of got an obligatory bonus as Aspilicueta style last year. And I fancy kind of him or even double United defence for that game. And just because, as you said, they're pretty interesting, aren't they, Burnley? So that could possibly happen. I'm just, I don't know. I'm not too sure about United. I've got Bruno. I'm very happy with that. And I think I will go for Wan-Bissaka. It's one of those, isn't it, where I think that double is probably just about good enough. So I think that might be a tight game. I can imagine that being 1-2-0. I'm not too sure, despite my what would Nick not buy philosophy, whether I'm looking to buy Rashford or Martial. I mean, Mark, if you are free hitting, are you going to be looking at the likes of Rashford, Martial, et cetera, or is it going to be defensive heavy?
Yeah, I'm not going to go Martial because I think there's a chance Cavani could play this game because he'll be rested having served his suspension. And One thing I think that Ollie might look at is set pieces and think, well, Cavani can give you a bit more cover on those. So I wouldn't be surprised if Cavani plays. I mean, I think one of the advantages of free hitting is the free hit follows the FA Cup. So we can look at the team sheets in the FA Cup and use them as a guide to who is definitely going to start. Now, you know, if Rashford's rested in the FA Cup, I probably will go Rashford because he's certain to start and he's had the rest. I mean, similarly, when you look at the Man City lineup for their cup tie, you know, it might be that Sterling gets a rest and therefore we go Sterling over De Bruyne even, because it's just a 1 week relationship. We can get De Bruyne in the next week. Why not? So these are the advantages that free hit teams have over people who are having to build for the free hit. And I think if we get that advantage, we should try and use it. So the team sheets in the FA Cup are going to be vital, I think, to informing some of my decisions.
I wouldn't trust Pep in any scenario after Tom's experience with Kyle Walker. Oh, Kyle Walker was rested in the cup. Yep, he's definitely going to play in the league.
You know, just trying to laugh at you about Lacazette, you're getting that one in. Rubbing salt to the wound, Nick. But yeah, no, I think that that's a very nice way of pulling on to City, actually, because obviously that's a big elephant in the room we haven't addressed. And those team sheets in the FA Cup are probably going to be a little bit of information that you may not get in game week 29. But equally, are we going to be able to discern very much from what Pep Guardiola does? Anyone could be randomly naughty steps. Would it surprise anybody here if Mahrez played both cup games and suddenly was also playing against Brighton? Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it? All three of us are without Kevin De Bruyne, and I think that he's probably the one who's going to get the most airtime. And as I've mentioned, not showing up in the market forces yet, but I'm anticipating we'll see a lot of Salah to De Bruyne sort of swapping around, especially amongst the less engaged managers who are not going to be in the free hit and will be just kind of buying their way into it. I mean, Mark, City-wise, Kevin De Bruyne probably leading the charge there. What are your views?
Well, it's almost tempting to go free of their defenders, isn't it? Because defensively, they're so far ahead of anyone else at the moment. And yeah. You've got Chelsea, who have wavered. Their defence has really faltered. Liverpool were just a non-starter defensively. I just think City, by far and away, have got the bankable defensive assets. And, you know, I've got Cancelo and Diaz, who I think are the two to have. Particularly with like the likes of Mendy, indiscretions off the pitch. I don't think Cancelo's got any chance of losing his place at the moment. He's in there on merit as well. I think he's probably been their best player this season. So I think that, those two are going to be in my team for sure. And I'm almost tempted to go, well, I'll get Stones as well, because he's looking more and more secure, and then try and find another solution in midfield. But I think it will be, certainly for the double game week, it'll be De Bruyne. I'll make the move from Mane to De Bruyne to cover that. And I'll go in with three City. Because the other thing with City is, coming out of 19, their fixtures are ridiculous. You know, they've got a run of three opponents who aren't likely to score against them at all. I think they've got, is it Burnley, Sheffield United and West Brom? You know, the three after game week 19. So you've got to think, you've got to have at least two defenders for that run. And that's why I'm thinking maybe even go the three, because you're banking pretty much three surefire clean sheets straight after game week 19, I think. So it's almost tempted to go about De Bruyne, but I think he's played his way into favour again, hasn't he? I think he's almost going to be my captain for that game week now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the defence is actually very intriguing at Man City. I don't think we'd ever have been sitting here, or anticipated we'd be sitting here thinking, oh yeah, City defence, wow, that's where I want to be. But the numbers this year have just been great, haven't they? The last six games, their XGC is three. There's two lower than any other team. Only three big chances conceded. And, you know, Diaz especially, perhaps, is like the low-key hero this year. You know, Pep always does like this kind of pinpoint anchorman centre-back. As a friend of the pod, James Carroll is a big advocate of this. And he's just one of those players who, like Otamendi in years past, like Laporte in years past, just plays every game. And they don't really get tired, because they don't have to do very much if you're a centre-back for Man City. You just kind of stand there and recycle the ball around, you know? Because if you have the ball, it means the opponent can't attack and therefore can't score. So maybe, you know, I know Diaz is a little bit expensive at nowadays at 5.8, but he's a great way into just kind of having that sort of certainty of starts, and like Edison used to be, just having that 50-50 chance of getting your clean sheet every week. Lovely. And so he might be one that you may think about including long term, and also one you may want to bring in just for the blank as well against Brighton. Hard to tell how that one's going to go. Obviously, there are quite a few options there for City. Raheem Sterling, I'm convinced there is a Son Heung-min level player in there. We've seen it in the past, and he hasn't blanked for 4 weeks, actually. They've all been assists. He's third for XA over the last 6 weeks. But that's not really what we're looking for from Sterling. We're looking for goals and assists. We're looking for more goals than anything else. And I think what's happening with him is that he really needs Aguero back. And I think Kevin De Bruyne as well really needed Aguero back until this week, where he was fielded as the false number nine. I think for me, the jury's still out whether Chelsea were just brittle or whether he was very good or both. I'm not too sure about how that's going to work. As Mark said, Cancelo, real eye test hero. I looked at his data, and over the last six, his eight chances created. But he's been robbed a lot of the time of getting assists. I'm sure, Mark, you've been looking at and cringing about. There's a wider cast of characters. So, you know, there's two cup games to come, as Mark mentioned. If Canigaro plays one of them, and if we know that he's playing 60 minutes, could he be interesting to some people? I'm sure there'll be some residual romanticism that could drive managers there. And I guess if things were, all things being even, and we didn't really know kind of who was playing, who wasn't, and we weren't kind of trying to predict Pep roulette, I mean, the Brighton game does sound like a Mahrez game, doesn't it? He's one of those players who does average a ridiculous amount in terms of points per 90. There are lots of options there. I'm not too sure how I'll set it up yet, but it does feel like the herd is going to move towards Kevin De Bruyne, and it might be one of those that will end up being a cover pit before long. I guess the final thing to speak about, because we've spoken about quite a few of the big teams, is the supporting cast. So we've spoken about Newcastle a tiny bit. Jeff Pedder mentioned Wilson, who we've spoken about. FPL Frenchie mentioned Carl Darlow, just because I think Sheffield United have been so rubbish. I mean, Mark, what sort of players are you looking to pad out your kind of free hit team with? I mean, Nick's got the likes of Mitchell, who he's putting his hopes in.
Yeah, I think obviously targeting Newcastle for Sheffield United looks a good fixture. It could be a very dour affair with a few goals, but you've got to back Wilson against that Sheffield United defence. He's capable of causing them a lot of problems. And similarly, I said earlier about the set piece weakness, and Kieran Clarke's the man to go to on set pieces for Newcastle. So those two are in my thinking. Obviously, Neto's got to be in there. I think he's been outstanding the last few weeks at Wolves. He's really emerged. I mean, there's been that kind of tag match between him and Podence in terms of which one to go for, which one's a superior force there. But I think Neto in the last 3 or 4 weeks has really emerged as the one I favour. So Neto is in my consideration as well. I don't think he's someone that people without the free hit need to fear, but he could turn up and get double figures. So it's not out of the realms of possibility. Everton at the moment are no great shakes, and I think I'd favour Wolves in that fixture. So I'd rather go a Wolves player than Calvert-Lewin, because obviously people without the free hit, a lot of them may well be taking Calvert-Lewin into that game. So I'm not going to go near him. I'll go for Wolves instead. At the moment, I'm looking at the main emphasis being on getting three Arsenal players, obviously the three City, and then padding that out with Newcastle and maybe one or two Wolves players. And it depends really whether I get Son and Kane.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's definitely going to be the way that I'm going to address it. Looking at Free City, I think that's fairly obvious. Just move us on to the end as well. And I think that double United probably is a way of doing it. One of Son or Kane, probably going to be Son in order to enable the rest. And then double Newcastle just because Sheffield United can't score. I think that's going to make quite a nice little team. And I think that's sort of really important to remember, especially if you are a very engaged manager who's across social media, you know, across the kind of different channels, is that it's going to look like everybody's free hitting. It's going to look like everyone's got a killer team this week. Even those who don't free hit, a wild card into it. We've got a few questions on that. Don't think we haven't considered that. We've got a few questions on to speak about that. So some people are going to have ridiculous teams to the free hit regardless. And you may think, oh, you know, I'm going to make no gains because my team looks so boring. I need to start making ridiculous punts in my week. I need to be getting the Richarlisons in, et cetera, et cetera. Really, most of the game won't be free hitting this week. And you are probably likely to do pretty well this week compared to the average. Obviously, the higher up you are, the best you're probably going to do from making a few sort of calculated risks. Well, I think that's probably brings us to a natural conclusion of this section. Hope that's useful in terms of just thinking about the free hit, how you're going to play it, how you're going to strategize it, and the sort of players you're going to go for. Take a break here and we'll move on to the correspondence and the Q&A just after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to quickly catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. We'll just do a quick rundown of the top five. So in fifth, it's our friend from Twitter, Alan Cooper, with the Oak Hall Army. He got 62 points this game week, but dropped a couple of places in the league. Also dropping is Wallace Clark with the Ace team, also getting 62 points. But the guys at the top did really well. So the top three is David Izzet. He got 69 points. Charles Hazel, he got 78. And Borisav Joksimovic, he got 71 points this week. So great week for him. Overall rank now 128. So that's pretty damn amazing. Cresswell, one of the stars of his team with 11 points. Also Captain Son, De Bruyne and Fernandez as well, doing the business there.
Brilliant. It's always amazing that the same names keep coming up, especially in the bad weeks. Those guys still keep kind of managing to grind out 50s, 60s, and everyone else is kind of averaging out 40s. Incredible stuff. Next section is correspondence. Normally, you'd have Anthony's joyous Hibernian tones going through this. Unfortunately, you've got to deal with mine here. Obviously, to get involved here, send us in your questions, queries, addendums, songs, poems, raps indeed, to whogottheassist@gmail.com, and we will endeavour to get them looked over, get them spoken about during the podcast, and obviously it will make Anthony the happiest man in all of the island of Ireland. This week it is Chris Antsy, who wrote us in a little while ago. Apologies, there is a bit of a backlog on these because of the quick turnaround pods, and it will continue to be a bit of a backlog on these. but they will all answer their promise. He writes into us and says, "All right, lads, my question is about the concepts for players' upcoming fixtures and how they're used to predict future outcomes. Because we very rarely seem to use previous fixtures," Chris says, "as a filter to contextualize previous points, returns, and even underlying stats." So he says, "You know, you're always likely to hear KDB has Fulham and Burnley in his next three games. I think I'll bring him in. You're also likely to hear KDB has the most shots, penalty box touches, and key passes of midfielders in the last three games. I think I'll bring him in." But what Chris says, what you're not likely to hear is KDB has the most shots, penalty box touches, and key passes in all midfielders the last three games. But two of his last three games were against Fulham and Burnley. Maybe that's something that should be brought into account. Chris reckons this is a rather large contradiction, because we're willing to use kind of perceived easier upcoming fixtures as an indicator of future success rather than applying that same logic to the past. And he's kind of wondering about the dynamic between the two things and how these things are expressed in the FPL community. And I thought it was quite a good one to kind of raise with Mark on. Chris also, I should say, says, no disrespect to Burnley and Fulham, you're not going to have loads of angry Burnley and Fulham fans on your doorstep, Chris, I'm sure. But a good one to raise with Mark on the pod, because obviously one of the founding fathers of how we do look at data in the FPL community. I mean, Mark, why does this sort of thing crop up, do you reckon? Like, how do you contextualize the information that you give out? I know you do a very good job, but with ours on Black Box of kind of showing as much information as you can. But what's your approach here?
Yeah, he's got a good point. You've always got to be cautious when you're using data. What Chris is presuming here that we just use stats like, you know, KDB's data of the last three game weeks. And so the number of points to make here is that, you know, I would never use a three game week sample to measure a player's form or, you know, how they're performing. I think you need to go beyond three game weeks. Normally I would want to use six. I mean, what I've been doing on Black Box is we've been using several like minutes per indicators, minutes per big chance, minutes per XG, non-penalty, and looking at totals over the season, then also looking at the last four matches as well. And so we're kind of working a blend between the two to try and avoid some of the things here that Chris is mentioning, that you can easily get skewed by just looking at a snapshot of someone's stats without looking at the fixtures that were behind that as well. I think it's a very valid point, and it's something you've got to protect against. And it's something this season that, you know, I look back at my career as an FPL manager, and obviously data has played a massive role in some of my decisions throughout the seasons. But I think when I'm looking at ways I can improve as an FPL manager, it's about looking at the way I use data and spotting weaknesses. When have I been guided by data, and when has it let me down? And just getting better at using data and trying to avoid scenarios like this where you would just go, oh, okay, Mane's had 11 shots in the last three game weeks, without actually looking deeper into why that could be. Is he playing in a different position? Is there a certain player? Is Salah not playing and therefore Mane's more of a focus? And who are the opponents? So I think Chris raises one of many kind of pitfalls that are open to us if we just use data on the face of it. You've got to use it as a starting point, as a springboard, if you like. So if you, it gives you a lead, you know, you can look at the last three or four game weeks and look at the names at the top of it. You know, El Ghazi, you mentioned earlier in the show, he's a player who's excelled recently. Well, have a look at the data by all means, but use the eye test as well. And also look at who those matches were, who were they against? Absolutely. So yeah, it's definitely a valid point, and nobody should take stats on the face value without investigating further. But I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, statistics and data are a great lead. They're a great way of kind of alerting you to players and teams and enabling you to look deeper into why that data could be the case.
Exactly. I think it kind of highlights the importance of, in psychology, what you call framing, presenting the data in a certain way to give the impression you want to give. So there's always the age-old example of, I think that X is a great player. He scored six goals over the last six games. And if you look at the data itself, look at the fixtures, oh, well, he scored, you know, it's a hat-trick and a brace in the first couple of games, and over the last four, he's blanked. But that, you know, six goals in the last six games, that looks the same as if somebody has scored a goal every game for the last six games. I think often what you see is people are looking to pass off, you know, that sort of headline idea as a kind of something which is going to be impactful. And it's often the case that, I think, kind of chiming what you said there, Mark, that as an informed consumer, to put that in inverted commas, as people who are listening to this, I assume to be, I think there's always an onus of responsibility on everybody to decide for yourself if you agree or disagree with something. So whether it's something we say or whether it's something you've seen written, like, we always assume that you'll do a little bit of research on your own to kind of think, all right, how much do I agree is what they said is justified. And I think one of the founding things about WGCA has been that we've tried to make sure that whatever we said, it can be evidence. Like, there's no, oh, I just love this guy, he's great. Things that come to mind here, I guess, are in the past where Watford a few years ago when they got thumped by Man City 8-0, I remember for weeks afterwards we were saying, yeah, blah, 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 from City looks fantastic. But remember, one of those games were 8-0, to answer Chris's question directly. And also there's a Saints game that I'm sure their fans won't want us to mention, but we had to cite that 9-0 whenever we mentioned Leicester players last year for an awfully long time, because obviously that inflated the scores. It's really important to bear in mind how you judge how those things impact what you call the baseline, whether the player is still appealing despite all those caveats being understood and acknowledged. And it's also very important, of course, to bear in mind that, as I say all the time, data is part of, not the full picture. So the eye test is always so important. I mean, you mentioned Algazi. I did have his data on him. I didn't mention those numbers, but he's absolutely smashing the data at the moment. Like, if you looked at the last six and you were looking at anybody, you'd be like, oh, I'm buying Algazi right now. He's top over the last six for shots and shots on target. And he's got a higher goal involvement for Villa than Grealish. He scored 44 points in the last 6 weeks, second only to Bruno, who's owned by 4% of managers. But if you watch him play, make your own conclusions about whether he's worth buying in or not. Nick, what do you reckon to this one then? I know you're one of those players who's quite conscientious about how you use stats, quite judicious about that.
I agree with most of the points that have been made. Obviously, we always try and avoid doing too many stats heavy podcasts at the beginning of the season when we've only had about three or four games played, because we know that it's very early doors and the form isn't necessarily showing at that particular moment in time. And, you know, things like fixtures do play a heavy impact. Yeah, you mentioned that Leicester game, for instance, when obviously we saw Bertrand got sent off in that one. And you do see stuff like red cards can throw out the stats quite heavily as well. So obviously with Crystal Palace, when they annihilated the 10 men West Brom the other day, Benteke got a brace. But we weren't suddenly trying to, you know, singing his praises, saying everyone get Benteke in, because it was a little bit of a fluke performance in that regard. So I think I agree with, as you said, about framing as well there, Tom. Just obviously, you know, we try and include it in all of our analysis when we're looking at the players and who got the most shots and who got the most goals in the last few weeks. But obviously, yeah, you have to kind of look at both form and fixtures.
Yep, certainly. I think there's always one of those sort of really, really interesting kind of areas around how we present these things as content creators, trying to give as full a picture as we can. I think a lot of the time we do try to say, we're going to present you a case for one thing or present you a case for another, but we never say you do this or you should do that. And we always try to leave it up to you. So yeah, a very, very good question, Chris. Thanks very much for writing in. As we mentioned, whogottheassist@gmail.com, and make Anthony squeal. Right, let's move on to the Q&A. And we've got loads of really, really great questions this week. Thank you very much for those. And I know I don't leave the Q&A post up for very long. That's just because I don't want people writing in 2 hours after I put it up and then feeling aggrieved that I haven't looked at their questions. So I put it up while I'm having my tea and then I delete it afterwards. And the first one this week is chip planning. Probably one of those which is kind of precipitated by the fact that things have changed a lot with that the Man City and Man United announcement. So James Carroll asked if recent events have changed our chip planning. For example, he knows that I was planning to triple captain this week in 2 weeks' time, but I've erred on a little bit on that. And Mark, he said that from Black Box, he knew that you were planning to bench boost in the upcoming double game week. He asked, is that still the case, or is it now kind of a case of waiting until the next best double game week for you? And Alex Ball asked a very, very similar question. And also there's this kind of emerging strategy of wildcard 18, bench boost 19, mentioned by the likes of FPL Banger and Thomas Daines. But let's stick to kind of the chip planning for the time being and whether things have changed. I mean, Mark, is it still the case you're looking at that bench boost? You're still confident in it despite all of kind of the COVID disruption?
Well, this is it. I think I had to wildcard ahead of 16 because use it or lose it. And I saw the fact, you know, the gain I can make from having the wildcard this late would be to use it to set up for the double game week and the bench boost. And so I'm sticking to that plan. But obviously, immediately after I played the wild card, the COVID situation escalated and we started to see postponements immediately. And we've had 3 postponements so far. So obviously, I'm nervous going into this double game week that that will be the case. But I don't think it's going to change my decision because I'm looking ahead at what my other opportunities to use it. And I'm nervous about the 26 double game week. I know that that is going to be another big one. And there'll be a lot of good teams, I think, will have 2 fixtures because it's based on who progresses in the FA Cup. But I do feel that, you know, there's European games in the midweek before that double game week. And therefore, you know, you've kind of got the opposite of what we got now. What we've got now is the FA Cup, then a rest. And some players who don't play in the FA Cup will have about 10 days, 12 days rest. Whereas for that double game week 26, it will be at the business end of the season when it's pretty serious. And teams in Europe will want to play strong sides. And I do think calling team sheets going into a bench boost in game week 26 would be difficult. So I still think this is the best game week to play it. But of course, the X factor is the COVID situation. I can't call it. I don't know. We've only had 3 postponements so far. And, you know, I've lost 4 players to that. I have missed out on 4 first choice players. I hope, you know, I think we all hope that there aren't any further postponements going into future game weeks and that the double won't be affected, but I can't be certain. But it's not enough. That doubt is not enough to make me back out of my plan now. I've got 15 double game weekers now because of the way City have dropped in. So I've got to play it with that. I think the potential is so strong, I've got to play it.
It's one of those things where you've got a real rather than theoretical risk that games won't be played, but equally you can't get too hung up on the notion of caution. I definitely feel that a lot of the time when you write stuff on social media, you'll get people saying, oh, but what if you get calls off, or what if he doesn't play, or what if he gets rotated? It's all around the same theme of being very, very cautious. So you know, it's the same thing. You kind of think, well, fine, just buy the Burnley players then and just go with that. And there's always going to be an element of risk in whatever you do. But if you've got those players and you're well set up for that bench boost, I can't see why you would pull out from doing that. I mean, for me, I'm going to take a late call on that triple captain. As I've said, it does feel like there's kind of a real rather than theoretical threat that those games won't be played. And there may well be a trip up during that double game week. So, you know, some sort of flight to safety saying, right, okay, Kevin De Bruyne, 2 good fixtures. Yeah, triple captain, that guy. That may well be the way I go. Maybe I'll even triple captain Bamford because he's got two very, very good fixtures. I'm not quite sure what I'll do with that yet. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position where I could bench boost because I wasn't quite kind of well set up at the time that the fixtures fell for bench boost without taking a lot of hits. So I'm going to kind of use that later on in the year. I appreciate what you're saying about game week 26. I mean, there's obviously the option to kind of build towards 26, between 24 and 26. 24 is when we learn about who's got double on game week 26. But that feels like a very narrow window. So there's always the traditional game week 37 bonanza. And that may be the one that I put all my hope in. As I said on the last podcast last year, I bench boosted in a single game week and got 130 points. So it's not unknown to do okay in that sort of week. It really does come down to it. I'm a bit jealous of people who can bench boost in 19 because it feels like a nice time to do it. As you said, there's no kind of extraneous issues with things like Europe. Nick, what are you doing? Are you worried about how things in recent times have changed?
Not really, to be honest. I was considering the triple captain in that particular week. I was thinking about putting on Mo Salah, but considering his recent form, you know, I'm not really seeing a strong case for that anymore at all. So that's kind of off the table. But then obviously with the fixture change, we've now got De Bruyne as an option for the triple captain. And he certainly looks like one that it could be put on, maybe. But then again, you know, that was his first goal outside of... that was his first goal in open play all season, wasn't it? So he's not been in scintillating form this season either. So I'm thinking I might keep it for a little bit later in the season because Kane obviously has that Fulham at home fixture that's going to need to be rescheduled, that could be the perfect time to play the triple captain, maybe, depending on when that is rescheduled. So for now, I think I'm going to keep in the locker. A little bit of uncertainty, of course, with the fixtures as well and possibility of cancellations. So I'm probably going to keep my chips in my locker. I think for the managers like Mark and people who've, you know, wildcarded recently, it kind of makes sense. If you've got those 15 men, and you're ready and raring to go with the bench boost, you might as well do it, because, you know, there's not necessarily going to be a better time in the season where you have a better opportunity. So by all means, go for it. But I think for me, I'm probably just going to hang on to my chips for now and look for those better opportunities perhaps later on in the season, just because of my current setup.
Also linked to this is that when we look at the bench boost, what you need are not heavy hitters for a bench boost. You need good, cheap or medium price options. And when I looked at this game week, you've got Leeds and West Ham, who've got two home fixtures, two very good home fixtures, both of them. And they've got players who you would want. The Leeds attack and Dallas at the back are all cheap options. And when they've got two home games, you'd back Leeds to do well. And West Ham as well. You know, if Antonio appears in the FA Cup and starts in the FA Cup, he could be someone I bring in up front. But as it is, I'll take Suchek and Kufal into the double. So I'll probably have three West Ham and three Leeds. And actually, they're the most important players, because your bench is not going to be made up of expensive players. It's going to be made up of, you know, players around the 6 million mark. And I just look at this double and look at the fact that those two teams have got two home fixtures and really good home fixtures. And I think that's a rare thing for that to happen, that you get two sources of value with two really good fixtures in a double game week. And I think that's what convinced me that it was the right tactic. But obviously, COVID is unexpected complication.
Yeah, that definitely is. I think that kind of allure about the fact that you can create quite a nice well-rounded team, it's definitely made people think about this emerging strategy that FPL Banger and Thomas Staines alluded to, that I said earlier, of wildcarding game week 18 and bench boosting in game week 19. So I've seen the likes of FPL Royser, the likes of FPL Analytic, and Adam Hopcroft himself even mentioning that it might well be worth doing it. So Mark, you mentioned earlier, for example, that a lot of wildcard teams were San City. I think that's probably one of those things that are driving people towards thinking, well, I might as well do this sort of rearrangement. People who have wildcarded in game week 16, wildcarding again, you know, 2-3 weeks later, which I think is probably unheard of in terms of kind of how that goes down. I guess it's kind of rooted in the fact that you're using a, by my understanding, a wild card and a free hit similarly, which is a resource to navigate a blank. And I guess the issue is, when is optimal to get that kind of total refresh for wild card and get kind of that team out and kind of you have the subsequent sort of team to deal with, versus a free hit where you've got that kind of 1 week, one night fling, and then afterwards you're kind of done, you know, it's all over. And it feels like my team, for me personally, as I said at the top, it's very kind of team specific how you deal with this. My team seems to be okay to deal with the upcoming tricky period. Later on, don't really have a clue. So I think that might be quite useful to have a wild card there. It feels like a free hit is quite good for now, given how I'm set up. Later on, that feels like kind of wild card territory. As I mentioned, I do have a mistake to correct, which is taking a -4 or even a -8 to get City cover back in, likely to be the Kevin Dubai back, we'll speak about that in a minute, and maybe a Diaz sort of player. But I'm sure these guys have got a good reason to wild card now and then bench boost later on because of how good the bench boost is or because of how their teams are looking. But for me, it's about looking at your own team. And for me, it's the back to basics thing sort of work. I haven't got good players in for 18, so I'm going to free hit for that. I have got a good team for game week 19. I just need to optimize a little bit and I can use a hit or two to do that. I've got all the resources I need available to me. I don't need to overcomplicate it by wildcarding. It feels like using a wildcard now as well. It feels a little bit like one of those things, given all the uncertainty, given how long the season is, might be one of those things I'll come to regret in a couple of months' time. So for now, I'm going to use what I've got in front of me. I mean, you've mentioned this a little bit, Mark, but what do you make of that sort of newfound emerging strategy of wildcarding now?
Yeah, I only came across it today, and it's very difficult because when you're so set on your own strategy, it's very hard to kind of take this new approach and try and see the logic behind it. But immediately I saw it, I was like, well, am I missing something here? What is the advantage of doing this? Particularly if you've wildcarded in 16, you presumably wildcarded to build for the double game week. So I didn't quite understand the logic behind it. I can see some benefits. I mean, obviously you can build for 18 and also some of the teams that have fixtures in 18, City and United in particular, have strong fixtures coming out of the double. So they have good fixtures for 20, 21, 22. So it's not like, you know, if you're going to wildcard for 18, you're going to land yourself with a bad team going forward. But I think it's just, for me, you're going to want that wild card, I think, for the double game week to come. You can't play the bench boost in game week 19. And as I've said before, I think 19 is the superior game week to play it in, I think, based on the fact that I think the European games are going to give us uncertainty, and also because West Ham and Leeds are such gifts to us. I yet to be able to see the benefits of this. But again, it comes down to a lot of what's staring at you in the face when you look at your team. Looking at mine, it's not a route that I would take, but someone could show me a lineup and I could go, oh yeah, I see why you're doing it. But I just think it's using the wild card, the second wild card this early is something we're likely to regret.
I think most of our teams can be sorted out with a couple of hits. It's just Manchester City, really, where we're all kind of looking at my team, for instance. I don't have any City coverage at all. So I'm thinking, I could wild card, I guess, just to kind of put myself in a really strong position. But, I'm not seeing like the massive added benefit. I mean, I'm looking at De Bruyne and Diaz. They're the guys I really need. And I can get both in on the -4. So, I'm not sold on the strategy at the moment. For the wild card 18, I think there's certainly going to be better opportunities later on in the season to use it. So my advice would probably be, have another look at your team and see if you can fix it with a couple of hits. If you can, then don't do it. But as we said, it's very team specific. So we've got some questions as well for the man himself, Mark. So we had a couple of questions here from Adam Pritchard and Desperately Seeking Dusan, Alan. And it's basically a two-parter. What most surprised you on your return to the FPL community, and has your involvement changed how you play?
Wow. I think the thing that really surprised me is just how much is available for free out there. I think because everyone knows my background and the fact that, I set up Scout with Chris and it became a business and it became a big thing. It grew beyond the realms of even my wildest imagination. And I think when I was doing that, I almost saw what was going on Twitter and what was starting up on YouTube as a threat to my business and my livelihood, and the fact that paid for the roof over my head, it was a concern to me. So I didn't really kind of raise my head above the parapet and take a look around as to what was out there, because it worried me. So I didn't want to know, almost. So I think the minute that I came back into the community, having left Scout, it was kind of, wow. I didn't really realise just the level of content that is available and the amount of time and effort people put into stuff for either for free or for, just meagre kind of reimbursement on Patreon. It's incredible the time people invest in FBL now. And it's fantastic. I mean, it was a surprise, but it was a pleasant one, because it just means that all of us, you don't have to, depart with any money. You can consume FBL content almost throughout the week. There's so many podcasts, so many streamers out there doing stuff that it's just fantastic. So that was a big surprise to me, just how much it was out there and the quality of it as well. And in terms of how it's changed my involvement, I think Black Box, the very reason we're doing Black Box is to assess what decisions we're making and what is behind those decisions. And I think that's what I'm changing, and that's what the community has made me more aware of is the basis of which I'm making my decisions and trying to be a better FBL manager. And just doing it now, I'm not doing it, my business isn't there in the background. FBL isn't my job anymore. And so I can play the game as I used to play it years ago. And that has changed my perspective on it, definitely.
There's a good question as well, just linking into that, from Cy Rutherford, who asked, do you think the game has changed with all that information and with the fact that, all of the kind of the secrets, I guess, that were privy to a select few, be they back in the day, Nick and I on the FFS forums, or listening to you on the Scoutcast, a very, very small niche group of people have now exploded into quite a large sort of, as you mentioned, fairly wide scaling industry, and which is still growing even now. Likes of obviously Scout and the Hub doing very, very, very well, and each year attracting huge numbers of people. Like, do you think the game has changed? Do you think that the kind of less engaged managers are getting converted more and more? And is that creating more of a challenge for engaged managers year on year?
That's a really good question. It's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, I think, you know, obviously, I think there's no doubt that the FBL audience is better informed now. I mean, the FBL's accounts in themselves, when I was working for the Premier League and pushing stuff out for them, you know, I was aware of the criticisms, like, oh, why are you spoon feeding the community this stuff? Because the perception was that that stuff was getting to a more casual player, if you like, because you only have to subscribe to the official Twitter channel to get that information. So I was sympathetic to that. I think there is a kind of a raised awareness of, you know, blanks and double game weeks and how to use the chips. But I don't know, I think that's fair enough. I think it's good that the playing field is leveled out a bit. And actually, I see it as a seasoned player, as a veteran player, it's meant I've got to raise my game and I've got to be smarter. And so, you know, we might all have access to the same amount of information, but you know, you can put more time in, you can analyze it better, you can look at your own decision making and improve that. There are things you can still do to get an edge. You know, you can put a set of data in front of two different people and they would interpret it differently. So yeah, I think if you want to still do well, then you've just got to raise your game and try harder and be smarter. And that for me is a greater challenge, and I welcome that.
I agree with you. I think kind of one thing that does, I've noticed definitely this year as well, in the work mini league actually, is that there are loads of teams which look curiously similar to the likes of you, the likes of FPL General. And I remember this fantastic anecdote. I'm sure you wouldn't mind me mentioning it. Matthew Jones, who you probably know, MJ, he said that so many people are haranguing him nowadays for live transfer updates. You know, people want to know when he's going to make a move, what he's doing. And it's because people are consciously copying him to win the work mini league. I mean, it's amazing, you know, over the last couple of years, how things have really kind of taken off in terms of just wanting that sort of shortcut to success. And I guess, you know, we all love informing as content creators, and maybe there's an element of us being part of the problem, I suppose. But I never really got that sort of spoon feeding debate, in inverted commas, same as you, Mark. It felt a little bit kind of elitist to me, and obviously it kind of felt like kind of weird, like, oh, you know, this is our information, you're not having it, wider world. And I often think as well that my ranks have been so bad in recent years because the content we've created has just been so good and so informative for other people. So there you go. Nick, I mean, what do you say to all of this? You've admirably insulated against all of sort of the prevailing headwinds in the kind of a content creator / social media space. I mean, what's your views on how things have developed and unwrapped?
Yeah, I think it's kind of crazy just to see how the fantasy community's grown in the last 4 or 5 years since I was involved. I mean, looking at how many players there are now in the game, it's 7.8 million, which is just ridiculous numbers. I think that's sort of twice the amount sort of 4 years ago. So yeah, it's just growing, and then just the Twitter community as well is just absolutely massive. So many really interesting content creators out there, and it has made the game more challenging, I think, to kind of try and stay in the sort of upper echelons of ranks. I know, like, you know, like Tom's obviously struggled last few seasons to maintain a decent rank, and he's definitely more competitive. And I think this season as well, as you mentioned, sort of some of the work leagues there with like lockdown, I think there's just more people getting involved with fantasy football because there's no pubs open, there's no places to go or people to see, really, isn't it? So, you know, getting actively involved in Twitter and fantasy football is just, you know, something to keep our minds out of what's going on in reality as well.
Right. Back to FPL as a thing for the last couple of questions here to round up the podcast. Kevin the buyback, and I'm going to adapt this question from FPL Awesome, who initially asked, you know, what we're going to do about City assets going forward. I think we've probably established here, we mentioned this earlier. I'm going to reframe this question. Are Liverpool sales the way to buy back into Manchester City?
Well, I've got Mane sitting there. Mane to De Bruyne was the obvious transfer in 19. The trouble is, Mane was easily Liverpool's best player against Southampton by a country mile. So I almost feel unfortunate if he's the one to make way, and it almost feels like it should be Salah rather than Mane. But you've got to go with you've got to keep the penalty taker. So it will be Mane making way to De Bruyne for me. I mean, that's a transfer I'd already booked in. So I'm prepared to do that. It's one double game week player to another, so it is a sideways move, I guess. But I was going to look at maybe Pope to Fabianski, but with Fabianski's injuries, that's out now. I'll probably transfer Wood out to Antonio, so I'll probably take a 4-point hit to just get a better striker, and if Antonio plays in the FA Cup and looks fit enough. But Mane to De Bruyne is a given, I think, for me, because I think I've got to cover it, and De Bruyne probably will be my captain for 19. Whether it'll be my captain for 18 in the free hit, I don't know. I think I kind of favour Bruno in that game week, I think.
Yeah, no, it certainly makes sense. Nick, are you looking at binning off your Liverpool assets, especially because you're not free hitting?
This week, at least, it's going to be Salah out for De Bruyne, but I think I'm going to follow it up the following week and do Son back to Salah. So I don't think I can go without Salah for that double game week.
More premium ping pong, Nick.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, at least with the last element of that, Salah has a blank, so it kind of works out. And then Son only has the single game week. And I've also still got Harry Kane as well. So, you know, I'm not removing my exposure from the Spurs assets. I think that kind of makes sense perhaps going forward, especially after sort of game week 18, game 19, just to go with the one Spurs asset and keeping Salah, Bruno and De Bruyne in place and stop messing around with those guys, because I have been playing around, taking one out week in, week out. And I got absolutely punished by Salah in 25 minutes against Crystal Palace. And I really don't fancy doing that again, despite a couple of bad games. We've seen it many seasons since he's joined Liverpool. He might have a couple of game weeks. People sell him. I can't remember the fixture. Tom will probably know because he sold him. But there was one, I think, where
Bournemouth.
It might have been, it was Bournemouth. That was it. Yeah, they won 4-0 or something. He
got a hat-trick.
Yeah. So, I think certainly I'm not taking any risks with Mo Salah. You know, they've got home match against Burnley in the double game week. That could easily be a massive haul. So, I certainly think in terms of targeting players, as we talked about earlier, De Bruyne is the player that I'd probably target. You know, Sterling looks like a great pick as well, obviously. But, you know, I can get in the defence as well by taking out Zouma, because I want to get rid of him. So I don't need to worry about selling Robertson. I can keep Robertson as well for the double game week.
Makes sense. I think the one that I'm really looking at is I'm probably going to keep Salah, to be honest. I mean, the underlying data is always such that he's worth keeping. I bought him at 12.2. He's now 12.6. That's quite a hefty amount of investment in a premium player. In a year, we haven't actually had that much investment in premium players. But Robertson out to a City defender has crossed my mind in order to finance Grealish to Kevin De Bruyne. And I think that is looking like something I will be doing in not very long. I can actually Robertson to Stones and Grealish to De Bruyne. And then if things stay kind of remotely stable in the transfer market over the next few weeks, and that may well be the simple way I do it. That's just me. I think that it's one of those things where, do you think that Liverpool are going to be able to recover their form? Liverpool, they've got Man United and Burnley in game week 19, Spurs in the game week 20, 21-22 look a bit better, West Ham, Brighton, and then they've got Man City and Leicester. I think that it's very hard to bet against Liverpool. I feel like it's one of those things for the last three game weeks, as has been very nicely pointed out this evening by Michael Cayley, they've just had a few games where things haven't quite worked out for them. They've beaten inverted commas, their opponent in terms of XG. So the West Brom game, the score is 1-1, but the XG for Liverpool is 1.5, West Brom is 0.7. Newcastle versus Liverpool, that was 0-0. XG was 1.7 for Liverpool, 0.7 for Newcastle. And tonight, 1.1 for Liverpool, 0.4 for Southampton. Of course, I was watching it and I knew that Mane, for example, his shot was scuffed straight into the arms of big Fraser Forster. But it's very difficult to bet against Liverpool. And I think it's one of those that you'll need to make your own judgment on. I think the key is actually going to be looking at their defence. And I think that maybe, as I mentioned, Robertson to Cancelo, who Mark sung the praises of, or Diaz, who I sung the praises of, may actually be a bit of a solid solution. So their fixtures are obviously incontrovertibly very, very nice. I think that's one of those things that, as I picked up a few weeks ago, when I was talking about before, when you've had double, or you could kind of overlook City. After the double game week, they've got West Brom, Sheffield United and Burnley. Mm. Three very, very nice games before they head into Liverpool and Spurs, and Arsenal, I guess. But Liverpool and Spurs 23-24, which are going to be season defining. For those three games, plus double game week, the next kind of five, plus, and in fact, next six, if you include the blank, those are very, very good games. I don't think you're going to see a payoff from holding out. And I think we're all going to end up kind of going with the herd there, unfortunately. Or fortunately, it's not very boring to be getting points after all. The final question this week is captains. Nice segue into transfers and captains, of course. Anish simply asks, Bruno or KDB captain? So we were in a situation where you've got the away king, Bruno, away, and the home king, Kevin De Bruyne, at home. What are we going to be doing? And transfers is probably a bit of a moot subject this week because I'll be free-hitting, Mark will be free-hitting, but Nick won't be. So perhaps we should start with Nick because he's actually going to be doing some transfers. Nick, what are you doing here?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I'm probably going to get a couple of City guys in. It's most likely going to be De Bruyne and Diaz that come in. So I'm getting rid of Zuma and bringing in Diaz. That was the plan anyway.
Poor Kurt, you won't be happy about that.
I know. Yeah, they've been pretty dreadful defensively the last few weeks. I think he's got to go. And I'm selling Salah for De Bruyne if I don't free hit. If I free hit, then, you know, that's completely off the table anyway. But I'll be getting De Bruyne, other Manchester City assets in. And then, yeah, with the captain, it's probably going to be the same as you, Mark. It's going to be Bruno Fernandes. I think, yeah, it's either Bruno or De Bruyne seem to be the two obvious captain picks, I think, for next week. But I think Bruno swings it for me. Looking at their stats, they're actually very, very similar in terms of the underlying stats. The only big stat that sticks out is the goals. And Bruno's got 11, De Bruyne's got 3. So that basically swings it for me. He's been putting his chances away and De Bruyne hasn't. So I think it's got to be Bruno.
Fair enough. That certainly makes sense. Mark, where are you on all this?
Yeah, I'm with Nick. I'm going to go Bruno, I think. I mean, the only thing that sways me towards De Bruyne is Brighton's weakness at set plays. I think they keep showing week after week they just can't handle crosses into the box, and De Bruyne is going to be on everything and be putting that in. And it might be the game where DS finally gets an attacking return maybe as well on the end of a De Bruyne corner or something. So I think there's points for both of them, but I think, like Nick mentioned, Bruno's eye for goal has just been extraordinary this season. He's just found a way of upping his performance even more from the lockdown performances we saw. I didn't think it was possible, but we looked on Black Box a few weeks back at just how Bruno has emerged as possibly the key heavy hitter to own now. And he's just not wavering at all. His form is just consistent. And so I'm going to go with him, I think.
Do you think we've seen with Bruno Fernandes, it's a question I've been itching to ask you for a long time, do you think we've seen with Bruno the heir to Frank Lampard in terms of being an FPL asset?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is just complete, isn't he? Because, you know, we knew the assists were there. We knew the set pieces were there. I didn't think he could be as potent from open play as he has been this season. And I think when you add that to, and the thing is as well, when I look up and every time United attack, his intent to get in the box is what's really eye-catching. It's not.
Yeah, it's the end product, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he's not just lingering on the edge of the box. He is bombing it into the box to be on the end of things. Like, he is proper playing like a box-to-box midfielder, which I didn't, you know, I thought he could be a number 10. He could end up being a number 8 and playing deeper. But he's actually, you know, playing now like a box-to-box midfielder. He's playing the role that we thought Pogba could play, as in, you know, when the ball's out wide, get into the box and try and get on the end of it. That's what Fernandes is doing. He's got a couple of headers this year. He's just, yeah, he's just rounded himself off as an FBL asset to the point where he is close to that perfection that Lampard provided.
I think we've gotten to the point now almost where he's starting to challenge Mo Salah on that pantheon of greatness, isn't he, a little bit? For me to answer Anish's question, I'm going to be free-hitting, so I won't be making transfers. What we're doing is worrying about my captain all the way up until the deadline. I think it's going to be between Bruno and Kevin De Bruyne and somebody else. I think I will narrowly come down, actually, as it stands on the side of Man City. It's because Brighton are quite a few things, but one of them is porous. They've got ridiculously good defensive stats, but has never borne out in the outcomes, which is absolutely incredible. The amount of times I've seen people saying Brighton are defensively solid versus oh, hang on, they've conceded two goals from two chances. Absolutely incredible. As Mark's mentioned, there's that susceptibility to set plays. Maybe you will find that Kevin De Bruyne may do something. Maybe you'll find that even Sterling will do something. That's very difficult to, you know, overlook the 5% ownership for Sterling and think, oh, you know, it's free hit. I should properly attack this and go for somebody like that. As I've mentioned, I'd love to captain someone like Mahrez against Brighton. I can imagine him just running riot randomly out the side, getting two goals and assists. I think it's probably going to be looking like somebody like KDB or Sterling. I know Bruno's always there. He's like the assistant vice captain. He reminds me of Kane a few years ago when we always captain Salah, always vice Kane, because we knew that if Salah didn't play for whatever reason, that Kane would come through for us, and Bruno's that guy. It's definitely a tough one, to paraphrase Nick, but I think I would be looking at KDB and Man City there. Yeah, definitely very, very tough. I think that's your lot for this week.
Cool. Yep. Thanks, sir. We were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. And thanks so much for coming on, Mark.
My pleasure. I loved it. And apologies it wasn't in a better game week for me where I could boast a bit more. But unfortunately, tail between my legs, so I just have to take my medicine. But it was a pleasure to go through the podcast experience with you, regardless of my miserable game week.
It's been very good having you on. I think it's definitely been... I very rarely do sycophantic stuff, but I think in this case, it's one of those things that felt very surreal, because Nick and I did a few years before we started doing WGTA, we're listening to you and thinking, yeah, well, if we could ever have this guy on one day, that would be incredible. So it's definitely been very surreal. I've definitely taken a screenshot of you on the pod with us, which I will, I won't frame it, but it's very nice to definitely have, and it's been really, really cool to do a podcast with you. Yeah.
Just missed the game week score off the footnotes.
No. Just this one more thing as well. The correspondence, just make Anthony happy. It is whogotthisassist@gmail.com. Write in any gripes, theories, questions, addendums, poems, raps, songs, whatever. We've got a poem to play for you next week by our friend Gav, which we would definitely absolutely love. We will return for yet another quick turnaround pod after Arsenal Palace on the 14th of January. There's only a 24-hour shelf life or so on that podcast, and it will be that way until the end of January. It seems to be that kind of thing going forward. We'll do our best to be there for you during that period. But nonetheless, we hope we assist you deal with the upcoming blank, and we're all off for a short break after an intense period of FPLing. Farewell, and speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
All right, see you later, guys.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.